The Transportation Department clarifying not all workers are exempted from the no vax, no ride policy. France records nearly 500,000 new COVID-19 cases amid its latest surge. And power supply issues still hounding Bohol more than a month since Typhoon Odette struck the province. Hi, I'm Karina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the midday news, a clarification to a clarification. The Transportation Department says not all workers are exempted from the no vax, no ride policy in Metro Manila. That's a day after Labor Secretary Silvestre Bello III announced the policy is not applicable to workers.
Hindi rin lahat pwedeng lumabas ng workers. If only if your industry is allowed under Alert Number 3, will you be allowed to board public transportation? They will really have to present a proof that they are workers.
Secretary Bello, meanwhile, assures the riding public exempting some workers from the no vaccination and no ride policy is safe.
Well, workers, when they are unvaccinated and for them to report to office, they have to undergo PCR. The reason why, safe sila kasi magpa-PCR yan, lalabas na negative. Otherwise, hindi sila tatanggapin sa trabaho. So let's assume that everybody is acting in good faith.
The DOTR also says they're now studying the possibility of putting up vaccination sites at terminals and expressways. The Justice Department also defending government's no vaccine and no ride policy, insisting it is not discriminatory. Justice Secretary Minardo Guevara says it is within the government's power to implement such a rule for the interest of public safety. Guevara also emphasized the policy is time-bound and may be repealed as soon as cases go down in Metro Manila. The Justice Secretary, however, admits implementing the policy to its full extent may be problematic. The province of Cebu rejecting the no vaccine and no ride policy. Governor Gwen Garcia believes it is anti-poor and discriminatory. She says the province will instead ramp up border control and stricter implementation of health protocols in public vehicles as a response to the growing cases of COVID-19. The Philippines logged over 28,000 new COVID cases Tuesday. It's lower compared to the tally from previous days. And that's because fewer tests were conducted over the weekend. Active cases eased slightly to 284,000, while the positivity rate stands at 43.4%. COVID cases in Metro Manila and the rest of Luzon Island have now exceeded the peak of last year's Delta variant surge. The health department also seeing a worrying trend in other regions, but it says it's still not sure whether the Omicron variant is driving the spike in fresh infections there.
Meron din po tayo na nakikita na high-risk case classification, actually critical sa Region 2 po. And then the rest of the other regions ay nasa high-risk na. Pag tinignan po natin ngayon ang trends ng mga ibang rehiyon dito po sa pagtaas ng kaso, nakikita po natin yung steep increase in the number of cases dito rin po sa ibang rehiyon. Hindi po natin pwedeng masabi definitely or with certainty that this is really Omicron. But based from our experience here in NCR, we are seeing the same trends in the other regions. But of course, this has to be proven by the whole genome sequencing also.
The Department of Education in Central Visayas suspends classes in several cities due to rising COVID-19 cases. The so-called health break will be implemented in Cebu City, Dalisay City, Karkar City, and Baez City in Negros Oriental. DepEd Central Visayas said three teachers and five school personnel in the region have so far contracted the virus. The suspension also comes after the health department confirmed 22 cases of the Omicron variant in the region. The Bureau of Immigration extends the cancellation of vacation leaves of its employees until January 31st. The directive was supposed to end last Saturday, January 15th, but it was extended as the agency suffers a staff shortage as more employees get infected with COVID-19. As of this week, 138 BI employees have contracted the virus, while 129 are in quarantine.
Mahirap po na kulang yung tao natin. That's why we're trying to maximize it po. And apart dun sa pag-suspend po muna temporarily ng kanilang mga leaves, nag-prepare din po tayo ng augmentation team na naka-ready po to back up po yung mga frontliners natin just in case kailangan po.
COVID-19 testing backlogs expected to be resolved within the week. That's according to COVID-19 Deputy Chief Implementer Vince Dizon. He says those getting tested are now getting the results faster compared to earlier this year when there was a surge in infections. Many patients who were exposed to the virus had to wait for at least 3 days to know their status.
Nung mga nakaraang linggo, umaabot ng 3-4 na araw ang paglabas ng resulta. Ngayon, isang kalahating araw na lang lumalabas na on average at minsan sa loob ng 24 hours. Kaya ngayon, mapapansin po natin, pataas na ng pataas ang ating testing output. Umaabot na tayo ng mahigit o 8 a day at tataas pa yan in the coming days.
COVID-19 booster shots will soon be administered in select drugstores in Metro Manila as the government continues to ramp up its inoculation campaign. This will begin towards the end of the week, Dr. Medical Agency Task Force says. The move aims to ease pressure on vaccination sites manned by local government units.
It became evident that we needed the help of the boticas when several of the local vaccination sites started to slow down, especially during this Omicron surge. The personnel in the vaccination sites were getting quarantined or isolated because they were testing positive. So that led to having a negotiations and training. So we started to train the pharmacists and the personnel.
A local pharmaceutical group welcomes this move.
Pharmacists are highly trained. They've been going through courses particularly geared at vaccination, how to handle vaccines, what to watch out for when they administer the vaccine to the recipients, and the potential side effects. It's important to select the proper venue, right? Because not every single drugstore will be an effective vaccination site. And remember, this is just in addition to the current vaccination centers. So it is not a total shift from the current vaccination centers to the pharmacies. So this actually expands capacity of the government to be able to administer vaccines. With the proper setup, I think with the selection of the right store, with appropriate space, etc., I'm pretty sure they'll be able to handle this particular program.
A new study shows a second booster shot still isn't enough to prevent infection from the Omicron variant. Despite this, Israel will continue to offer a fourth dose to high-risk groups. More in this report.
Israel will keep offering a fourth COVID-19 vaccine shot, a senior health official said on Tuesday, despite early findings that it's not enough to stop Omicron infections. A preliminary study published by Israel's Sheba Medical Center on Monday found the fourth shot increased antibodies to even higher levels than the third, but it was, quote, probably not enough to stop the highly transmissible Omicron variant. Gili Regev-Yohai is a director at Sheba Medical Center.
The Pfizer vaccine, after 2 weeks, you see an enhancement or increase in the number of antibodies and in neutralizing antibodies. Pretty nice increase. It's even a little bit higher than what we had after the third dose. Yet, this is probably not enough for the Omicron.
Israel was the fastest country to roll out vaccinations a year ago. It started offering a fourth shot, also called a second booster, to its most vulnerable and high-risk groups last month. Israeli Health Minister Nachman Ash said the fourth dose still offers protection from serious morbidity, especially for the elderly and at-risk population, and encouraged citizens to keep getting vaccinated. Israel has seen cases rise due to Omicron, but has not yet recorded any deaths from it, and predicts cases stoked by the variant will start to wane in a week.
There is no evidence at present that healthy children and adolescents need booster doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. That's according to the World Health Organization. It says, while there seems to be some waning vaccine immunity over time against the Omicron variant, more research needs to be done to ascertain who needs a third shot. Germany and Hungary are the latest countries to offer boosters to children as young as 12, following the lead of Israel and the U.S.
There's no evidence right now that healthy children or healthy adolescents need boosters, no evidence at all. So this is why the SAGE, which is our technical expert body that makes policy recommendations, has been meeting and will continue to meet, will meet later this week to consider the specific question of how should countries think about giving boosters to their populations with a view to protecting people, with a view to reducing deaths.
As most of the world administers a third or even fourth COVID vaccine shot, vaccine equity remains such a big issue. At the 2022 World Economic Forum, the WHO pointed out only 7% of the African population has received two doses of COVID-19 vaccines. In comparison, over half of the world's total population has already been double vaccinated. The director of Africa's Disease Control Center also expressed his anger and disappointment.
Study after study, including our studies, is showing that 80% of the populations are ready to take vaccines if the vaccines are available. So what we have seen over the last 2 years is really total collapse of global cooperation and solidarity, period. I think there is absolutely no reason why a continent of Africa should be lagging behind with having 7% of the population fully immunized. A continent of 1.2 billion people is totally unacceptable.
Gavi, a vaccine alliance which co-manages COVAX, is seeking more funds to reach the WHO's goal of vaccinating 70% of the population in poorer nations by July. A grim pandemic milestone set in France. French health authorities detected 464,000 new infections Tuesday. That's its highest ever since the pandemic began. The surge, fueled by the Omicron variant, has also pushed the average daily number of new cases over the past week to over 300,000. Despite the unprecedented rise in cases, French teachers' unions are calling out government's COVID testing and isolation protocols, which they say are severely disrupting classes. Japan also seeing a pandemic high number of cases. Its single-day caseload breached 30,000 for the first time, surpassing the previous record of nearly 26,000 set in August last year. Because of this, more prefectures are seeking quasi-emergency measures to stem the spread of the Omicron variant. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said he will consult a group of experts Wednesday on placing Tokyo and 12 more prefectures under the quasi-emergency measures from Friday through February 13. China urging the public to take extra precaution when opening mail, as officials suggest packages from abroad could be the source of its local Omicron outbreak. More in this report.
China wants people to wear masks and gloves when opening mail, especially when it's sent from abroad. That comes after authorities suggested the first case of the Omicron variant found in Beijing could have arrived through a package from Canada. The state broadcaster CCTV said on Monday that citizens should minimize their buys of overseas goods or receiving mail from abroad. It said people should protect themselves during face-to-face handovers and wear masks and gloves, and even try to open the package outdoors. Health officials said the person found infected with Omicron opened a package from Canada, and transmission through the parcel could not be ruled out. China has been largely alone in its view that COVID-19 can spread through cold chain imports like frozen meat and fish, while the World Health Organization has played down that risk. China has vowed to step up disinfection of overseas mail and insists postal staff are fully vaccinated when they handle it. The country has fought to stop COVID spreading with the Beijing Winter Olympics less than 3 weeks away. Hong Kong went so far as to order the cull of 2,000 hamsters on Tuesday, echoing the mainland's zero-tolerance policy even as much of the world shifts to living with COVID. It also warned pet owners not to kiss animals after a cluster of infections was traced to a pet shop there. The outbreak of Delta variant cases led to tests on hundreds of animals in the Chinese-ruled territory. 11 hamsters showed up positive. Health Secretary Sophia Chan told a news conference authorities were acting out of caution, even though there was no evidence domestic animals can infect humans. Hong Kong would not be the first place to cull animals infected with the virus. Last September, three pet cats were put down in the Chinese city of Harbin. In Europe, Denmark introduced a plan to cull all 17 million mink after a mutation of the virus spread to humans from one of the animals. And last year, some Russian regions inoculated animals against COVID-19 after Moscow said it had registered the world's first vaccine after doing tests on dogs and cats.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, thousands of Bohol residents still at evacuation centers more than a month after Typhoon Odette hit the Philippines. We're going to talk about that and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back. There's still a Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Transportation Department clarifying not all workers are exempted from the no-vax, no-ride policy. France records nearly 500,000 new COVID-19 cases amid its latest surge. And power supply issues still hounding Bohol more than a month since Typhoon Odette struck the province. Back with more news, the Senate suspends the search for former Budget Undersecretary Christopher Lau and other personalities linked to the formerly controversy. That's amid the surge in COVID cases. Senate President Vicente Soto III says this is to prevent members of the Office of the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms from catching or spreading the virus. The Senate Blue Ribbon Committee earlier found that Lau was in charge of handling some 42 billion pesos in funds that the Health Department transferred to the procurement service of the Budget Department without proper documentation. Aside from Lau, subpoenas have also been issued for business associates of former presidential economic advisor Michael Yang and the girlfriend of Farmley's corporate secretary Mohit Dargani. The panel's chairman, Senator Richard Gordon, said last month they're wrapping up the five-month-long investigation on government's pandemic supply spending. Poll watchdog Contra Daya raising concerns about the composition of the Commission on Elections in the coming months. This as its chair and two commissioners are set to retire next month. The remaining commissioners were appointed by President Rodrigo Duterte, and he will again be appointing new ones in March. Contra Daya convener Professor Danilo Arau hoping they will undergo public vetting. This was echoed by another poll watchdog, Lente, as they hoped civil society groups will have an active role in choosing the next commissioners and keep the balance in check within the poll body. More than a month since Typhoon Odette's onslaught, the situation in most parts of Bohol remains dire. Bohol Governor Arthur Yap says power supply issues are still hounding the province, with many electric posts still unfixed. He adds thousands of families are still staying in evacuation centers. Yap renews calls for help from the national government.
Panawagan na rin sa National Housing at sa HADSI or kung sino ahensya man yun, yung sinasabi nilang 10,000 daw ang ibibigay nila sa partially damaged, tapos 30,000 daw sa mga totally damaged. So, hinihintay ng mga tao. Yung tanawagan din sa DBM na palabasin na nila yung budget circular nila para maumpisa na yung pagbibigay ng ayuda sa mga tao.
Well, that was the strongest typhoon to hit the Philippines last year. Latest data from the Disaster Mitigation Agency show at least 407 people died due to Odette. Well, with efforts worldwide going into battling the pandemic in Zambales, citizens are doing that, plus fighting powers that be that have allowed the construction of a jetty port for mining in the Alusias River. Heidi Fernandez joins us now to talk more about this. Heidi is the executive director of Save Zambales Kalikasan Movement. Heidi, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Carmina. And thank you for guesting us, because we really need help in this issue, in our battle on the ground against the construction of the jetty port for mining.
Okay, before we get into that and how you found out all about this, I understand that it began to happen middle of last year when the pandemic was raging. But first, I want to talk about how important Alusias River is to the citizens of Zambales.
Alusias River is very precious to the citizens of Zambales because this is a very important waterway for us. Number one, it's a watershed. And number two, it's also a very precious resource of aquatic resources for us, like fishes. A lot of fish species and shells and shrimps. It's very rich in natural resources and aquatic species. So when people need something food to eat, they don't have nothing, no food on the table, they could just go fishing there and they have food already. So this is a very important resource. And then number three, it is also the source of a multi-million peso industry for our fishermen. This is the bangus fry industry. It's something like, maybe I can state like a 10 million peso to 30 million peso industry. This is the area, this river is the source of bangus fry in the wild. You know, bangus mothers or the sabalo spawns in that area where the fresh water meets seawater. Because that's the biology of bangus. So the people, the fishermen, from March to July, harvest the bangus fry and they sell it for 1 peso per fry. And they supply this to the provinces, the fish ponds and hatcheries of Pampanga, Bulacan, and Pangasinan. That's why we have very good quality bangus fry, bangus species in our country. So we're a major supplier of bangus in the region. So that's a very important, the very great significance of Alusias River to us.
All right. Now, as you were speaking there, Heidi, we're showing video of some dredging that's happening in the river. What part of the river is this? If you can talk to us about this video, and when did you take it, and how far along into the dredging process have these people been when you discovered?
Yes, when we discovered it, actually, they have not really dredged the river yet. They tried to redirect the river last April 28, 2021.
Heidi, I just want to make sure that what we're seeing is actually the video that we were showing. Can you just explain to us what that means?
Okay, this dredging activity and the reclaiming activity, this is actually a reclaiming activity that you're seeing now from the air. It's a drone shot, which we took, no? So this is the escalation of the activity of this corporation, which now actually is a sole proprietorship called AGN Trading, which was authorized by Mayor Leo John Farales of San Felipe Town. This is the town next to us. It does not even have the political jurisdiction on this river, Alusias River, which is in the political jurisdiction of San Narciso Zambales. So, okay. You're seeing the dredging of two backhoes. They are actually building a road. They are converting our river into a road network to service the jetty port in front of the West Philippine Sea. our shores, in front of our beach resorts, and in the very area where we have the Lahar 5 surfing area. Lahar 5 is our version of the Cloud 9 of Siargao. So this is where celebrities, beginner surfers, expert surfers go to. So the jetty port will...
Yeah. So when did you find out, Heidi, that this was actually happening under your very noses?
Yeah, we found out literally a few months from April, like early last year, early 2021. We heard the news that there's going to be a project for the jetty port, and then we got a copy of the mayor's permit, which was issued April 2021. And then April 28, 2021, the company, the contractor, started dredging already the river. And they tried to redirect Alusis River. And then it escalated. They tried to come back April, June again, June 24, 25th, and then July 15th. Because every time they come in, we block them. We block them. We confront them and we block them. So they retreat. And then October 6, 2021, they were issued a notice of violation. This company was issued a notice of violation by the DNR, Environment Management Bureau, Region 3, for lack of ECC. Okay, this is October 6. And then November 24, 2021, they already got an ECC from the DNR. But the ECC, also stressed by the DNR, is not a permit to implement the project. Yeah, it is just a management tool. It is just a management tool to guide the implementation of the project. So they need a lot of permits from the Philippine Ports Authority. They need permits from the Office of the Governor, from the DILG.
And they don't have that yet, Heidi.
They don't have that. They don't have that, definitely. And we also questioned the ECC because it was issued without the requirements of the law, which is consultations with the community and the environmental impact assessment, which is very, very important.
And like, because you said, Heidi, that they don't have these necessary documents with them, who's your best line of defense here? Who's supposed to make sure that the regulations are followed? Should it be the Office of the Mayor to make sure that everything is in order?
It should be the Office of the Mayor and also the DNR. The Office of the Mayor does not have the expertise to make sure that all the environmental impact and all the necessary protection for the environment is being implemented by this company, or to make sure also that all the permits are there. So it should be the DNR that's monitoring this project. But unfortunately,
but they issued an ECC.
Yes, they issued an ECC with conditions that they should have this following permits from the Philippine Ports Authority. They should have the permits from the Department of Public Works and the Highways and the Office of the Governor. There are so many permits that they need to comply with, you know, the legal basis for this project. And they have not done this. They're using actually the ECC as a permit to implement the project. That's what
Heidi, as we speak, what is happening now in Alusis River? Are there any activities ongoing?
Yes. The fishermen are camping out there. There's 30 fishermen are with their families also, and they're acting as human shields so that the backhoes will not be able to totally damage our river. So when the backhoes enter, they go to the river because they on the reclamation area in the river, and they block the backhoes. So we are able to block and delay the project implementation. But we need help from our police forces, from our law enforcement officers to do something about this, because this is a very important waterway for us. And we also need support from the DNR. We have actually called the DNR to revoke the ECC because they have violated many provisions of the ECC already.
And what did they tell you, Heidi?
Nothing yet. They just acknowledged the receipt of our protest letter.
With the activities happening, has it already disrupted biodiversity in the area? Have you, even this early into the project, have you, your, the citizens, the other citizens, the fishermen, have you noticed changes already in yes. the ecosystem, in the biodiversity in the area? Go ahead, Heidi.
Yes, we have already noticed that, of course, you know, the part of the river has been reclaimed. So a lot of fishes have died. I was there last January 15th and I made a live video and I saw the fishes dying. And the other area of the river, the water from the river is already flowing inside our barangay, which is Barangay La Paz. So as a matter of fact, even the backhoe of the company that's dredging it almost drowned because they really deepened a portion of the river. So they had to open it again so that water would flow towards the West Philippine Sea. This part is like just a few meters away from the West Philippine Sea already. And then we also discovered that there's already a coastal erosion that has happened in our area. We measured an approximate of 7 meters coastal erosion already. So the shore has receded by 7 meters already.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Heidi, have you talked to the company?
We have, the DNR did an arbitration between the company and us last December 22, 2021. That was last year. DNR called me and they woke me up at 8 o'clock in the morning, told me that, ma'am, we have a meeting today at the office of Barangay Captain Marlita Santos, one of those who issued the permit. And I said, today, as in today, that was 8 o'clock in the morning. They said, yes, because we just called AGN Trading, this company, the one that's dredging the river and our sea, because the AGN Trading just said yes to it. This is how government treats us, Carmina. This is how government treats us. Under the law, it should be like 2 weeks prior notice for the community consultation, but they gave us a notice of 2 hours. But nevertheless, we went there so that they won't have a case against us that technically we're there, we went there. Mm-hmm. So we mobilized our fishermen and we attended the meeting. And what happened was the DNR only defended the company and Mayor Farales of San Felipe and said that the project has an ECC already. And I said, how can we solve this issue if you are defending them and telling us that there is an ECC already that was already issued? And I said, and the company said, when I asked him, the Mr. Alan Nuque, the general manager of AGN Trading, what is your port for? Because the ECC doesn't say what it is for, the purpose of the project, which is very irresponsible, very, very unlawful for the DNR to approve a project which does not have a purpose, right? So I asked Mr. Alan Nuque, what is your port for? He was very quiet. And then he said, we will give you jobs and we will get the lahar from Santo Tomas River and other parts of Zambales so that we sell them to China and Singapore. And then I said, and we told them that definitely our position is no to the jetty port because we are not jobless. We have livelihoods, we have fishing, we have tourism, and tourism also provides jobs for the people. We have surfing here in our area. So many industries that we have here. We don't need the jetty port. That will destroy our ecosystem irreparably. And we do not need human rights violations in our area.
Here's the thing, Heidi, this was happening while the pandemic was raging on. Do you have reason to believe that some people have also used the pandemic as a cover for similar activities in other parts of the country, Heidi?
Well, you know, if they could do this in our area, they could do this in other areas. And we are really very heartbroken because of what the DNR and the local government units did to us, because this is the middle of the pandemic and people should be, you know, working for their food, you know, and the protecting themselves not to get sick. But these people who do not respect the law are doing this in an area where the place is not really very, very visible, you know. And they could easily do this thing, except that we were able to catch it before they were able to damage our river and our sea. And we call on the DNR to stop this. Please revoke the ECC and please stop this project.
So what's the next step? What are you waiting for? What's the next milestone here?
We have law enforcement authorities who are coming over and making an investigation for potential criminal prosecution, because that's our request for them. I cannot disclose this yet to you because this is a special operation, but this is going on. And then we also are filing legal cases against the mayor and for the protection of our ecosystem. That's our next step. And definitely our people will be more empowered and will be more vigilant to guard our river. We don't want the river to be totally damaged.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. We'd like to thank you for joining us. Heidi Fernandez there, Executive Director of the Save Zambales Kalikasan Movement. You take care. You keep safe. Thanks for coming to the show. Really appreciate it, Heidi.
Thank you so much, Carmina. And I hope the media will continue to help us amplify our issue.
Thanks. Take care. All right. From there, we're going to move on to world news now. Russia and Belarus set to rehearse counterattack tactics as tensions with the West escalate. This report tells us more.
Russia and Belarus will rehearse repelling an external attack when they hold joint military drills in Belarus next month, both sides said on Tuesday. It comes at a time of acute tensions with the West over neighboring Ukraine. Russian military forces and hardware began arriving in ex-Soviet Belarus on Monday for the drills to be held near Belarus's western border with NATO members Poland and Lithuania. The West has voiced fears of a possible invasion of Ukraine by tens of thousands of Russian troops gathered near its border. Russia has denied such plans. Deputy Russian Defense Minister Alexander Fomin said 12 fighter jets, two units of an anti-aircraft missile system, and a Pantsir missile system will be deployed to Belarus for the drills. Belarusian leader Alexander Lukashenko, a pariah in the West since a post-election crackdown in 2020 and last year's migrant crisis with the European Union, said the drills were needed as Ukraine had built up troops near Belarus.
An initial damage assessment underway into Saturday's massive eruption of the Tonga underwater volcano. But a sister report tells us the harm it will cause to its surrounding environment could last for years.
The destruction from Tonga's massive underwater volcanic eruption is still being assessed. But scientists now warn that the damage could be long-lasting. The volcano has been releasing sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide, two gases that create acid rain. This could damage crops, including staples like taro, corn, and bananas, which locals depend on. Geologist Marco Brenner has been studying the eruption's impact via satellite photos.
So a lot of that ash and gas will remain within the stratosphere for quite a number of weeks and possibly months, and kind of circulate across the globe. The more immediate impact on Tonga especially was the ash fall directly from the cloud, which blanketed most of the Tongan landscape in a few centimeters of ash from what has been seen of satellite images. And that basically had an impact, basically water, drinking water sources, on vegetation, grazing for animals, etc., because the volcanic ash is toxic.
And it may not just be Tonga. Much of the rain could land on Fiji. Underwater, fish are at risk. Tonga's livelihoods depend on the ocean, but ash from the eruption could be harmful to marine life. Murky, ash-filled water near the volcano will deprive fish of food and wipe out spawning beds.
Certainly fisheries are likely to have been impacted by, for instance, the murkiness of the water. So the eruption would have produced quite a lot of suspended particle in the ocean water. So that might impact fishing grounds. Ash fall could also have such an impact and could potentially cause changes in ocean surface acidification.
Meanwhile, surviving marine life will be forced to migrate. Even before the eruption, Tonga's reefs were threatened by disease outbreaks and the effects of climate change, including coral bleaching and increasingly strong cyclones.
Norwegian mass murderer Anders Behring gives a Nazi salute as he arrived in court for his parole hearing. Here's the full story.
He gave a Nazi salute as he walked into the courtroom. That's mass murderer Anders Behring Breivik on Tuesday, arriving for a parole hearing to decide if he should be released after spending more than a decade behind bars. The far-right extremist set off a car bomb in Oslo in July 2011 and then gunned down dozens of people, mostly teenagers, at a Labour Party youth camp. He killed 77 people in total. Now, soon with a shaven head and dressed in a dark suit, he re-entered the courtroom, thanks to a Norwegian law that allows anyone to apply for parole after 10 years. He carried signs, printed in English, including one that said, "Stop your genocide against our white nations and Nazi civil war." He was later told to stop displaying them as the prosecution presented its case. Addressing the court himself, Breivik blamed his crimes on online radicalization by a leaderless network of far-right extremists, which he said had motivated his attacks and brainwashed him.
First, I would like to talk about what happened, who I was, and who I am today. And some of the accounts will sound frightening to you and to the Norwegian public. But it is important and relevant and explains how brainwashed I was 10 years ago and how many are equally radical today.
42-year-old Breivik is serving Norway's maximum sentence of 21 years, which can be extended indefinitely if he is deemed a continued threat to society. Proceedings will take place over a maximum of 4 days in a prison gymnasium converted into a makeshift courtroom, with a decision expected about a week later.
The Italian parliament will convene next week to begin voting for a new head of state. And as this report tells us, former four-time Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi is emerging as a top bet.
Silvio Berlusconi.
He has been, of course, very controversial. He has been condemned. He has been excluded from parliament.
Is emerging from the shadows to become a central figure in Italy's presidential discussions.
Berlusconi believes he is one of the most important persons, possibly the most important historical figure in Italy.
The Italian parliament will convene on January 24th to begin voting for a new head of state. And center-right parties have confirmed they want the embattled former prime minister as their candidate. But could he really make it?
This is what Berlusconi is looking for. He's looking for an applause, for the recognition by Italy of his importance.
Giovanni Orsina is a professor of history at Luiss University in Rome.
I think on the whole it is rather unlikely. If he were anyone else but Berlusconi, I would say it's 0%. Given that Berlusconi has made us used to his missions impossible and that he really has achieved targets that to everyone seemed unreachable, then I say it's not 0%, it is maybe 5%.
Berlusconi has been campaigning tirelessly behind the scenes and has mobilized his media empire behind his bid. The 85-year-old and former four-time prime minister potentially stands in the way of current PM Mario Draghi. Italy's center-left Democratic Party has categorically ruled out backing the billionaire media tycoon. And the anti-establishment five-star movement, which has the largest number of parliamentarians, has echoed that sentiment. On the streets of Rome, support is mixed.
Allora, secondo la mia opinione, se vince Berlusconi...
If Berlusconi wins, there should be a demonstration, because it seems ridiculous to me that a person like Berlusconi could win.
Che possa vincere una persona come Berlusconi.
Oddio, sta un po' avanti con l'età, però...
He's a bit old, but we'll see what happens. As a politician, he's done well. He's also had legal problems, but he's always been acquitted. He could do well.
Però è stato sempre assolto. Potrebbe andare bene.
Berlusconi's right-hand man and lower house deputy, Vittorio Sgarbi, has said he suspended his efforts to persuade undecided lawmakers because it was proving, quote, a desperate task. After all, Berlusconi has a record that includes tax fraud and the scandal over his notorious bunga bunga sex parties while he was last in office.
I mean, who can be surprised of anything that Berlusconi does? Berlusconi, as I said, is a person that has demonstrated in time to be able to do things that no one else would dare do.
In business, a UN agency doesn't see tourism arrivals returning to pre-pandemic levels until at least 2024. The World Tourism Organization cited the highly contagious Omicron variant for the dim outlook. It says while the variant causes mild symptoms, it will disrupt recovery in early 2022 as global travel restrictions were again imposed to curb its spread. It adds the pace of recovery in the tourism industry remains slow and uneven due to varying degrees of vaccination rates and traveler confidence. Back here at home, the Philippine Central Bank says online fraud cost consumers around 540 million pesos in 2021. This has raised the pressure on Congress to pass a financial protection law. Sherianne Torres gives us the full story.
Rose, not her real name, received a call from a supposed bank officer last April claiming that her bank accounts are being hacked. She was advised to immediately change her password. Rose, who was used to talking to her bank's branch manager using a mobile number, immediately trusted the caller. She also gave her one-time PIN or OTP.
Alam niya na agad yung profession ko, lahat. Dinidictate niya. So, napaniwala ako kasi ba't alam niya yung personal information ko. Kahit nga username ko alam niya, hindi ko agad na-realize yun na dapat talaga hindi ko binigay yung OTP. Kaya lang nabigay ko na yung OTP ko sa tumawag. So yun na, nag-proceed na po lahat ng transaction. Feeling ko hindi ako na-protektahan.
Rose was asked to wait for a call the next day for a new password, which did not come. She later found a total of 900,000 pesos illegally withdrawn from her account. Rose was able to recover 330,000 pesos after her bank was able to trace the fraudster who attempted to again withdraw from her account. Bank Fraud PH, an organization helping digital fraud victims, underscores the victims' difficulty to recover their stolen money. Bank Fraud President Richard Law says the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, which is supposed to protect the banking public, can only refer the complaint to the bank.
We group them together, then we ask BSP, can you at least mediate group sila? BSP is saying they cannot do that. So BSP and PC cannot do anything because they're going to say they can only mediate. But it's a referral system. So referral system, they're just going to say to the bank na you take care of this.
The Banco Central admits they have no power to resolve digital fraud complaints, which from 2019 to 2021 totaled to 42,456 cases, amounting to 2 billion pesos in losses. In 2021, hackers were able to rake in around 540 million pesos from thousands of digital consumers, according to BSP Governor Benjamin Jokno. Given these limitations, financial regulators extended their appeal to the Senate to immediately approve the Financial Consumer Protection Act that will grant them quasi-judicial powers in handling bank fraud cases without the need for any court intervention.
Hackers and scammers took advantage of the digital infrastructure and consumer vulnerability to perpetrate crime. These cases could be resolved quickly once the FCP Act is in place. This act will empower financial regulators such as BSP, the Insurance Commission, the SEC, and the Cooperative Development Authority to expedite the adjudication of reasonable monetary claims more efficiently fairly and openly, all to the benefit of the consumers.
Senators say they will try to enact the measure before 18th Congress ends. Bank Fraud PH urges bank depositors to place their savings in either current account or time deposit, since any attempt to touch their money would require bank checking and days of clearance. The BSP, on the other hand, reminds the public to exercise cybersecurity hygiene. These include ignoring emails, texts, or calls asking for one's personal information, because financial institutions would not ask for sensitive details. Consumers are also urged to use legitimate mobile banking apps, avoid using public Wi-Fi when using e-banking websites, and activation of multi-factor authentication in all banking activities. Sherian Torres, ABS-CBN News.
In the NBA, the Minnesota Timberwolves rallied for a 112-110 win against the New York Knicks. The T-Wolves went on a 10-3 run to close out the game and earn the victory. Anthony Edwards led Minnesota with 21 points, while Karl Anthony Towns added 20. The T-Wolves now have an even 22-22 record, while the Knicks slip to 22-23. Some entertainment news now. Animated series South Park will return for its 25th season. Its season premiere is set to air on February 2nd in the U.S. and on April 6th in Asia. The sitcom is slated to come back to Comedy Central, where it has aired on Wednesday nights for the past 25 years. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify, so be sure to stay tuned there. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANT 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, keep healthy, keep it here on the News Channel.